Yeah.
I think you go in and you do your report. This is what we do. This is how we do it. This is why we're important. And I think you sit down and I think you're good to go.
Okay. I've been not to enough of those. If I were to take like some testimonials, I mean, would that be helpful, you know, to submit a packet to them to review later?
If you submit a packet, you want to give it to the legislative staffers.
Yeah, ahead of time.
A few days before, so
right.
That they can become part of the official record.
I mean, would that be helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe what I'll do is just reach out to a couple of the offices, city, county, just saying, hey, could you give me just a paragraph or two on UPC's value and benefit to your office? I mean, would that be helpful?
And then the numbers, I mean, how
yeah.
many you
yeah.
have attended,
yeah.
not just the conferences, but then the distance training that we've done.
Right.
I think building a report with an executive summary, I mean, a lot of agencies do that for important things. I think you're kind of stuck maybe doing a, I'm suggesting a 4 to 5 page report with a half-page executive summary, something like that, mm-hmm. so they can quickly review. This is why UPC is so critical.
Okay.
And throw in the numbers that are important to report. Some legislators really like numbers.
Okay. All right, well, we will get on that next week and try to put something together. So when you say the legislative staff, who would I send that to then?
So each committee
yeah has a staffer
has staffers
plural. Okay.
Executive appropriations I don't know what it is.
I can just go on the Ledge web page or website.
Yeah, whatever the committee is, you said
yeah.
it's an appropriations
it's
committee?
The Executive Office's Criminal Justice Appropriations Subcommittee.
Yeah, you can pull that up and it will identify specifically who the fiscal analyst is, the staffer, and the
okay.
legislative attorney.
Okay.
And I mean, I know that you can do this, but you put all those numbers in there and say, and we do this with a staff of
five
folks.
Well, you may want to say a state-funded staff of
two.
Three.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right, fully federal,
90%. Well, 90% of my salary is from my grant. Everything else is from my grant. So all my travel, training, everything else comes there. The only thing UPC pays is 10% of my salary. So
yeah.
my salary is going to be, it's 10%. Every other penny is grant funded.
If you can report the state legislation, this is done with tax dollars for 3.2 employees from the state.
And
it's going to, it'll make money.
Yeah.
But include all your, of course, what you do.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
I do a lot in that 10%.
You do. Okay. All right. Let's see.
I've got the names of the staffers.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
The executive assistant is Debbie Benson.
Debbie.
The finance manager is Gary Seifus. And the financial analyst is Alex Wilson.
Yeah. Okay.
So if you just send whatever to those.
Right. To all three. Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Chair, I think that takes us down to the SWAP UPC best policy or best practices.
And who's
So I provided. Yeah, I appreciate.
Conversation on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can put them up if we want to see them.
They were in the email
pack. I emailed these, if you remember, I emailed these to you before Christmas, right after we had our working committee and came up with basically the final draft that Jeff proposed, because I wanted to give everybody plenty of time to look at it. Now, whether or not you're able to take the time. But yeah, if anybody wants to actually see it or have Jeff go through any of the specifics, I don't want to say it's a done deal, but it's kind of is a done deal. Right, Jeff? I mean, unless...
We're going to have one small tweak that I know of today.
Okay.
Basically, we picked some ones that we thought we could get done without too much angst. And so we got a number of them done. And the next ones coming up are ethical guidelines derived from the Do the Right Thing packet. I don't know if you
yeah, from New York.
Not see that, provided by Brock Belknap. The eyewitness ID, which is a lot of it's a rule, and then critical incidents. Those are the three that we'll probably work on this summer. So the goal is to have SWAP approve these as best practices, and then on January 22nd, do a press conference with the idea to get a little ahead of the legislative session to show that we are able to self-regulate and to do good things as prosecutors, and we don't need, we're not going to say this, but we don't need the legislature to tell us what to do. We're good at doing it ourselves. And so we haven't really planned a press conference exactly yet, but that's what the goal is, to have that done on the 22nd.
Who from the council would you like to be there, if anybody?
I think I'll leave that to the UPC or the SWAT board to figure out how they're going to do that press conference. I mean, we do want as many prosecutors as we can at that press conference, whether they're speaking or not. We want to show this is a statewide effort that has participation from basically all entities throughout the state. But I think enough people here on the SWAT board are going to be at the meeting that we can kind of address that at that meeting.
Okay.
Certainly want you there, Bob.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to say anything.
I don't want to throw a blanket on anything, but I've got it. I don't think we're anywhere close on this. I think things like whether or not there's a civil remedy to be considering that, taking that into consideration when I'm making a charging decision is not good policy at all. I think it's a policy decision. I don't think it's something that should be universal for every prosecutor. I think a lot of this is stuff overcharging. If somebody commits 10 crimes, charging them for 10 offenses, that's a fact. I mean, that's not overcharging. I don't think we should take our talking points from what the defense decides or defines overcharging as.
I'm not sure you're talking about overcharging in here.
There's a thing that says
number of charges. There's a portion of there about number of charges.
Yes. There is.
But you should not charge what you think. But you shouldn't charge too many crimes. Even if a person has committed 100 crimes, you should only charge 5 counts.
It doesn't say that, though.
It kind of says that.
It says that you should take that into consideration.
Yes.
Those numbers. And we do all the time. I mean, I get cases of sexual abuse, for example, that your victim says is happening, however many times. I'm choosing the ones that are best provable by for me. And so I am limiting the number on the basis of what's easiest to prove to a jury and what's, economic for my county as well. All those things are taken into consideration. Always
some cases are scheduled for trial. Sometimes you'll prune some charges just for the purpose of the narrative at trial.
Sure. So I don't think that being a policy that you should consider these things. That doesn't mean that's going to be the ultimate decision maker. If the policy decision maker is the person.
Or if there's a diversion program available, or if a person gets treatment, a treatment is a good example. If somebody is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times the legal limit on a DUI, I don't care if they got treatment. I don't care. That case is getting charged every time. Yeah. Every time.
These aren't intended to say that you can or should not. The intent is to say these are factors you considered, and again, you may disregard every factor when you make that decision, but you should consider factors.
Well, in fact, the word is prosecutors may consider the following factors. These are just things that we can consider. We want to. We don't have to.
Right. But isn't that a policy decision? Yes. In other words, shouldn't every office decide whether or not to even consider it?
Well, I think that's what these are. They're saying each office should adopt, at the very beginning, each office should adopt policies consistent with what they want to do in their office, and these are examples of what you may adopt. You may adopt one that says, no, I'm not going to consider this because I believe it. You may just leave it out because you believe that's not one you should consider, and I agree. I looked at some of those things, I thought, I don't really want to consider that issue. I agree with that, but I also think that in my office, I can adopt policies that are not only the exact same as what are in here, but you should adopt policies that so if someone's violating those policies, you know, we can deal with it, which is the same thing. I mean, if you have an attorney who is charging all these things here that shouldn't be charged or is not charging what should be charged, you need to have a policy so you can enforce that either way you go. I think the way I read it for me in my office is we should adopt policies. I don't have any policies when it comes to charging that are written in my office. I've always just charged what's there. I think that's what you're saying is, you know, I charge what's there because that's what the law is, and we'll go there. You know, most of my considerations are made after the fact when I'm dealing with the defendant. But I do make considerations on number of charges, on things like that beforehand because, you know, I have 40 charges, but, you know, I want something in there for every victim to feel made righteous. And so I make
very good. You make those decisions, Stephen, respectfully. If you have a victim who has come in and saying, absolutely this happened, but there's no way I'm going to cooperate, I don't want this charge, that affects your decision. You still may charge it, but I'll bet most of us have done sex cases where we have not charged a case that maybe we could have proven because the victim was so vulnerable or could have been so harmed by the prosecution that we made a decision to not charge.
Right. Or we just charged sexual battery because we knew they would take it.
There's a lot of things that the victim wants to consider, even though we ultimately ignore them. So we take the risk factors into consideration. Sometimes we make decisions one way or the other based on those factors.
Well, that's all we're
trying to say.
When you ignore it, you still consider it because you know that it's
yes.
Yeah. When I first read it, I had heartburn with it as well. Just so you know, because I'm sitting thinking I shouldn't really be considering all these outside sources when I've decided to charge something. But all it's saying is that it can be considered, not that you have to personally consider that.
But then that's essentially us taking one thing and calling it another. Saying these things are basically saying we can consider anything. I mean, really? I mean, isn't that really what it comes down to? Shouldn't we as prosecutors, if we're interested in truth and justice, shouldn't we have policies that are actually meaningful? And saying we can consider anything doesn't, I don't think that gets us anywhere. I don't think that's forthright enough.
I think it's a list that creates at least a thought process, if not a conversation within the office. Is this, you know, have we thought about this? I hadn't considered this before and looking at this person's history. Well, based on his history, I don't think it's something we should take into account. You know, so at least it creates that conversation, it creates that thought process of something that you know, you might not routinely do.
And the idea also was to talk about things that we should not consider, which is a little later. And I think those are pretty universally agreed upon that we should not consider many of those things.
And things that we agree on universally, I'm absolutely for. Things that one office might consider and another office might not, that's kind of, I guess, where my sticking point is.
Sure.
I think these should be things that we all agree on. We should all provide Brady material. We should never provide falsified information.
But is that really a list of best practices or a list of constitutional requirements?
From my perspective, I think a document that lists those and says, here's what we do, is far more effective than this. That's just my opinion.
But the problem is,
you know, we will pursue justice.
We're doing this so that the legislature knows, as you said, we can self-regulate. They don't have to come in and have prosecutorial oversight boards and things like that. We can show that. And so we have to promulgate some best practices, something and it has to be an umbrella over the entire prosecution community that says, these are the best practices. Now you prosecutors in your individual offices, the very first one, says you need to promulgate your own policies, but these are the best practices and these are what we recommend as an umbrella organization over the top of all the prosecutors. I mean, the goal is to show the legislature that we can regulate ourselves. Please let us continue to do that, right?
That's a significant portion, yes. I mean, the other portion is we think it's something we should be doing even if the legislature doesn't care. We probably should be trying to together create best practices throughout the state to make sure that justice is delivered as fairly as possible. I think it generally is, but why shouldn't we try to improve that system? If this doesn't do it, Ed, we need to look how to do it. If it does, then that's what we were hoping it would. But ultimately, again, if there's something that we all agree, this isn't a factor we should consider, then we should toss it. But if it's something you should consider, but you don't want to do it, that's okay.
I think from my perspective, I think it should be much more aspirational rather than defensive. I think throwing in the numbers, we're ministers of justice. We relentlessly pursue justice. We're held to the highest ethical standards by, Supreme Court decisions, by the bar. We provide, I don't know how much training every year. We want to improve upon that by providing this extra guidance. I mean, that's my thought on how I would approach it, rather than, we're kind of scared you're going to do something.
Oh, we don't put that in here, that we're scared you're going to do something.
Well, I think when you say we have the expertise and means to self-regulate, mm-hmm. The way I would phrase it is we don't need to, we already do that and we don't need it. Or we already do
that. That is true.
Those are my thoughts. I don't think we should be defensive about it.
Yeah, and the problem is you have to look at your audience when we talk about the legislature, and again, a comment you made, there's so many of them that don't even understand. I remember, I think it was just last year, the year before, Robert Van Dyke goes up to testify before one of the committees and starts off by saying how prosecutors are different, we have a different role, and you could just sense the feeling in the room of who is this guy and what is he talking about. I think
it was the House Judiciary Committee.
Did you get that same sense that when he started trying to explain the role of a prosecutor, there was just, it was just like all of a sudden there's this aura of cynicism. We're not going to listen to another thing that you have to say on this bill.
It was contrasting the role of defense attorneys who have to represent their clients to the role of the prosecutor.
Did you get the same sense in that room?
Oh, yeah. It benefited the work that we were doing.
Correct.
Very much.
Yeah, we were on the opposite side of that. It was
the wrong tone, amazing. The wrong message can certainly shut down the stakeholders that we're trying to communicate to. I think you're saying as well.
Yeah, I think we're the good guys. I think we do good. I think we're passionate about that. And I think the message should be, there might be a suggestion, or it's kind of maybe we're not the good guys. I think we're the good guys. We're wearing the white hat. We do justice.
Are you suggesting, like in the committee purpose, we enhance that a little bit? Is that what you're suggesting?
But you talk about those factors, Ed, and I'm confident that if you went through that list, based on your experience, that you probably considered every one of those at one time based on a different case. Maybe not at the time of screening and charging, but at the time of disposition. One of those three times, I'll bet that you considered every one of those things on that list.
That's the problem that I had, is exactly that, which is when I charge a case, I don't care if there's a civil remedy. If the person gets treatment or can get treatment, I don't care when I'm making a charging decision.
I would disagree with you, because when you're doing the charging and the screening, you're thinking about what is the end game, and you're probably saying, man, we've got to get a conviction on this guy, we've got to get him in treatment, right?
And that's why I charge him. So I can do that.
Correct.
I think as far as sentencing goes, as far as how you handle the case, I think all of those are in
disposition.
But up front,
I remember when I was at prosecutor boot camp, Judge Parker, who was at the DA's office at the time, said that you should file like a defense attorney and prosecute like an executioner. And that stuck with me since 2009, I think it was. And the idea that when we're filing charges, we should be very cautious about what we're bringing forward. Once we file, have at it. But this idea that, yeah, we can pay attention to these factors at the end of the line, we change people's lives as soon as we file charges. And to pay attention just at the end of the line and ignore it on the front end, I don't think that's what the best practice for a prosecutor is.
I don't disagree with the reasoning. And I can see how different offices might approach that differently. I don't think that's a universal maxim that we can adopt. And I guess that's kind of, in my mind, there's a difference between good policy decisions and universal truths. And I think if we're going to do best practices, it should be things that are universal.
I just have a question on one of them here. Well, I'm on the same one here. Is the legislature going to have issues with Q?
What number are you on?
80-2.2.
Q.
Back to consider when screening attorney is Q. Whether the size of the loss or the extent of the harm caused by the alleged crime is too small to warrant a criminal sanction, yet they've already passed a law saying this is a crime, and now you're saying that's not good enough, so we're not going to charge that. I worry the legislature may read into that we're deciding not to follow.
Let me give you an
example. Letter K the same way.
Yeah,
it's not exactly the same, but we had a bunch of U of U players, baseball players come. I don't know if you're in the office, right? And they painted a big U on the BYU Y on the mountain, right? Big U, red paint.
Community Improvement Project.
Pretty fun. I just did that last night. Was I not supposed to do that?
Well, what do you think the damage was to clean it up? At the time, it was over $1,000. Well over $1,000. So you have 6 or 8 U players that the prosecutor charged with a felony. So, again, this is a little different, but when I got the case, I said, oh, come on, a felony for this? So I immediately reduced it to a misdemeanor because I thought the extent of the harm was too small to warrant a felony. So I did take that, not exactly, but I took that into consideration, and I reduced the charge immediately. So I think most of us do, to a certain extent, take that.
Did your judge limit your restitution amount?
No.
He can.
Yeah, ours does.
Some judges do that. That's
I had 6 or 8 players to split it between, so.
Right, but if they're all charged, I've had judges in the past who, if you had multiple people with a misdemeanor, he's going to limit the total for all of them to be the misdemeanor amount.
And that's fine.
So
it wasn't going to be an issue in my case. I don't remember all the details. I remember the basics. It wasn't going to be an issue. But to charge these relatively, well, they were your U players, so they weren't clean cut. No, these are clean cut kids with felonies for,
that's a pretty good
funny prank, right? Was, I thought, the wrong decision, because the harm wasn't warranted. It didn't warrant a felony. Don't we,
as judges to graffiti?
I know felony prosecutors do this all the time.
Exactly.
This doesn't rise to a felony level. And I think misdemeanor prosecutors, we do it all the time too. Does this really merit prosecution? Is it really a harm here? So I think it's at least a factor that I've used. Maybe.
I think that's probably more of a consideration in the felony realm than in the misdemeanor realm. Where the cases are a little more complicated, there's more.
I would disagree again. I've had a case where someone took a pen, and they wanted to charge, like a writing pen, and we said no.
How much was the pen?
I don't, 30 cents, I don't know.
It wasn't a month long.
It wasn't a month.
Yeah. And it was a month long, exactly.
Is that a retail theft case or just a theft case?
That was a theft case.
Somebody's desk?
I don't remember anymore. But we said, no, that's just ridiculous. We're not going to charge a theft because someone stole a pen. How it even got to us in the first place, I don't know. The police should have screened it out. But. So it is a factor we considered, and we said no. Emma, would you file that?
It would depend on the situation, the person's history, how old they were, the scenario. That would be very fact-sensitive.
Sounds to me like you would consider it, though.
Well, I would have to. It would be on my desk.
What I'm saying is, would you consider the factor of the harm was so minimal that it didn't merit entry into the criminal justice system?
I would have to look at the case in total.
Well, you're a good lawyer. You will answer my question.
Does anybody else read a case any different way?
No. I agree with that. We look at many factors. Is this one of them?
What if it was the last?
That's all I'm saying. Is
I mean, honestly, if that came across my desk, I'd look at it, I'd probably be going, geez, a pen. But I would screen the case and then make a decision based on all the factors.
So Steve, that's why he said that.
I'm just wondering. That's why I throw it out there.
By the way, we didn't reinvent the wheel on any of these. These are all either NDAA
best practices, and there's some ABA ones, and there's some DOJ ones. So none of this is, well, almost none of it is us just making up new stuff. I think there was a couple things we threw in, but not very, hardly.
If anything, we softened the language.
Yes.
So are you looking for a vote from the council or a recommendation on this?
I view this more as a scrap issue, but if you'd like to vote.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying is, I mean, clearly we needed to have this discussion, you know, so you can take it to SWAP, but do you want the council to take an official position on it or not, or just, is this conversation enough? Or does the council want to take an official position?
I think from our position as training prosecutors, that's our goal. I think maybe not today, but after SWAP adopts, I think it would be appropriate for us to adopt it as our, or to approve it or recommend it or something like that, simply because I think that's part of our role as well, to recommend whatever it is, or not recommend, but to make a decision on whatever it is to the rest of the prosecution community. And that should, our training should be based on that if we do intend to adopt it or recommend.
If the organization plans to adopt it, adopting it before the 22nd would be chronologically.
Yeah, no, probably at the next council meeting in April. Is when we would adopt
before the January 22nd press conference. And so if you're planning on adopting it subject to SWAP adopting it, you can make a motion to that effect that we adopt it if SWAP.
Or we at least endorse the pursuit, yeah. and the
right.
I was just thinking adaptation. Logistically, you said there were going to be a few more tweaks to it. I hate to recommend it at this point.
I'll tell you the tweak. This is minor. The AG's office looked at the duty of prosecutor after conviction 6-1.0, and they pointed out that the county prosecutors, at least, don't have the authority to do some of this. That has to be through the AG's office. So, so B, where it says that when a prosecutor reasonably believes a convicted person is actually innocent, the prosecutor should. And their point is, well, you as a county prosecutor don't really necessarily seek the release of the defendant and seek to render the conviction. Only the AG has the authority to do that.
Well, but they would be passing that information along to the AG.
Right.
Yeah, so the SEEK language, doesn't say file anything. It was intentionally passive to address.
And they just want to insert a clause to make it a little bit more, like, we'll recommend the AG or we'll.
Yeah, we're not gonna agree to that. Our office is not gonna agree to that.
Anyway, that's what they wanted. Something in there to address that the AG has the authority.
That we all must bow to the AG's office. I give them the AG's office.
but back to the original question.
How about just go through proper channels too?
Oh, that's what SEEK, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's because it just says SEEK. It doesn't say.
I think SEEK.
They just want to have their name in there for something.
I don't think the council needs to do anything at this point.
Well, I think Will's point is, I think Will's correct. If we can do a subject to SWAP, then the 22nd, at least at the press conference, or you can do it sometime before the press conference, then we can say, listen, UCDA is on board, SWAP's on board, UPC's on board.
Yeah.
Without it being verbatim, we could say that we endorse SWAP's pursuit of the creation of or adoption of.
And then just to show up there in support of it at the press conference.
Yeah.
Congrats.
Okay.
It's a safe motion.
Is that your motion?
Oh, yeah, that would be my motion.
Any seconds?
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
They all opposed?
Okay. Thank you.
Got it.
Is that helpful, Jeff?
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on then. What do we have left?
Training.
Training report.
So we started off, our training committee started off kind of interesting because, as you recall from the retreat, it was almost like this ground shift of the direction that they wanted us to start training. They wanted to be more skills-based and more regional and kind of going away from the large conferences. And as we talked about that as a training committee and reviewing that in light of our budget, where we made a determination that we'll try to, there might be some type of a metamorphosis that happens over time, but it's something that we can't do immediately. And so